city. With a jerk of his head and a shrug of his shoulders, he ambled on in another direction. Maria, Małgorzata, and Henryk Pallister, along with Dr. Maria Rudolfova, Irena, Adam, and the girl, Anna, made the dangerous trek south out of the city as Warsaw burned around them. "She treated me like a daughter," Anna said of Irena later. Lice and bedbugs chewed them in their sleep, and they combed the ruins for something to eat and for water. Then, undeterred, they threw themselves into starting up their hospital again. Mokotów was among the last districts in Warsaw to fall, and Adam and Irena left behind them fighting that continued for several weeks. By October 4, 1944, it was all over in Warsaw. The uprising had been defeated. The final death toll was catastrophic. 200,000 residents, most of them civilians, were killed. As the German occupation continued into the winter, another 150,000 were ultimately transported as slave labor to camps in Germany, and the concentration camps claimed another 55,000. Some historians say that the total number of Jews to survive the war in Warsaw was fewer than 11,000. Adam and Anna were among them. Henryk Pallister, struck down by a German truck in December, did not make it. And by winter, just as Hitler had wanted, Warsaw lay in ruins. The Soviet and Polish armies at last entered the wasted city on January 17, 1945. By then, 80% of Warsaw was stone and rubble. All that winter, Irena and Adam, living under false papers still, as Klara Dąbrowska and Stefan Skrzymski, stayed on at the hospital station in Okęcie, and from her southern outpost, Irena carried on working for Żegota up until the final moment. That winter, at last, Irena's leg wound healed, one of the injuries treated at the hospital station, although she was still limping from the damage to her legs inflicted by her Gestapo torturers. Despite the Soviet liberation of Warsaw, the war, of course, would go on for months across Europe. But in Warsaw, all that was left was to count the losses and fear what would come next. Hundreds of thousands were in labor camps and prisoner of war compounds far from home. A staggering 15% of Poland's pre-war population, 6 million people, had perished. So had 90% of the country's Jewish population. In late 1944, Dr. Adolf Berman's wife, Basha, wrote in her diary about what it meant to understand at last the scale of that destruction. "Even after the final liquidation of the ghetto, we clung to fairy tales about underground bunkers and sophisticated shelters in which thousands of people are supposedly living. Then we deluded ourselves that they were in the camps, and when the nightmare ends, we'll return with a fanfare of victory to the ruins." There were perilously few survivors. Many of the victims had been the children. At the start of the war, there were an estimated 3.4 million Jews in Poland, 1 million of whom were children. According to Yad Vashem, only 5,000 children out of that million survived the war in Poland and the final massacres of the uprising. The number may be low, historians quibble. Double it. Triple it, then. The numbers are still shatteringly small. And there was, in fact, one very sophisticated shelter in which thousands of Jewish boys and girls were still living. A shelter staffed by dozens of volunteers, who were often nothing more than immensely decent and brave people, that spread across the city and safeguarded Irena's children. Of those youngsters who survived in Warsaw, Irena and her network saved the greatest proportion. In the first weeks after the Soviet liberation, Irena once again encountered Rahela by chance on a street in Warsaw. It was a moment that afterward defined something essential for Irena about what it meant to try to piece together a life in the decades that followed as witnesses and survivors. when they met in the midst of the wasteland that had become Warsaw, the two women embraced for a long moment on the street. "We survived that hell," they said to each other, laughing. Then Irena saw that Rahela was crying. "I'd never seen Rahela cry before," Irena remembered. She reached for her friend, and Rahela looked at her sadly. "My name now," she explained to Irena, "is Karolina." "Only Karolina? Rahela died in the ghetto, Irena. Stanislav knows nothing of her existence." Irena nodded gravely. She understood. Part of her had died in the ghetto, too. So had part of all the surviving fighters. Now Rahela told her she and Stanislav had a baby, a little girl, and all there was to do was try to make a future. Dwelling on the past could only mean reliving the intense sorrow. Rahela was a vibrant young woman, and the hardships and deprivations had not destroyed her spirit. She was by nature cheerful and resilient. But, like so many in Warsaw, Rahela buried that other life completely. "She never talked about those things again," Irena said later. But, as the women parted on the street, hands touching lightly, her friend turned to her. "Sometimes, Irena, will you remember Rahela?" Irena promised she would. Chapter 17. How the Stories Ended. Warsaw, 1945 to 1947. Adam and Irena stayed on in Okęcia with Maria Palester and Dr. Rudolfova until the spring of 1945. It would be months before the war in Europe finally ended, but by March the mission at the barracks was changing. What was needed now was not a field hospital, but a home for the thousands of war orphans. Maria and Dr. Rudolfova opened the doors of the facility to homeless youngsters and stayed on as the new directors. In March, Adam and Irena went home to Warsaw together. For them, the end of the war was, after so many false starts and interruptions, the real beginning of their life together and their long-awaited love story. That love story had been untidy and chaotic. The human heart is not symmetrical or neat either, but turns back on itself in folds and knots. And the ties that connected Adam and Irena and the passion that still burned between them were as strong as ever. There were challenges ahead. War had left its scars and traumas, some of which marked the mind and some of which marked her body. And there was the question of what she was going to tell Mietek if he made it home to Warsaw. But Irena loved Adam, and this was what she wanted. So, in making a home together at last, their life began anew. Adam, who would never again go by that name, but would instead call himself Stefan, the name in the false identity papers that Irena had found to save him, returned to work in earnest on his doctoral thesis, and immersed himself in his books and the study of ancient history. Irena, in contrast, directed her energies outward. She returned to her job at the city welfare office and devoted herself to rebuilding it from the ruins. She was quickly appointed director of the citywide welfare services. One of her first acts as director was to establish a formal bond of cooperation with the orphanage in Okęcia and with Maria Palester. After a long, dark season, there was good news at last. The losses were behind them, and Adam and Irena could now rejoice together in stories of survival. Helena Szeszko was alive when the Ravensbrück camp was finally liberated, and she made it home to Warsaw. Dr. Hirschfeld and Dr. Radlinska were survivors. Izabela Kuczkowska, Irka Schulz, Władysława Marinowska, Janka Grabowska, Stanislav Papuzinski, they all lived to see the liberation of Poland. Stanislav reclaimed his motherless children from the foster homes and orphanages and reconstituted his family. Marek Edelman, the young man who worked beside Alla and Nahum at the Umschlagplatz medical clinic and who led a heroic uprising in the ghetto, was lauded as a hero. he went on to become a doctor. One likes to imagine that, in doing so, he was remembering Alla and Nahum. Irena and Adam now added to their new family two Jewish foster daughters, including Irena's favorite, Estera. It made for a full house, and they had a small apartment, but Irena now wanted desperately to be a mother. Estera stayed on with them for several years, and she remembers of her adolescence that Irena and Adam were affectionate and protective. Adam spent hours with Estera, coaching her on her homework and acting as a tutor. He had always loved teaching. What of Irena's other children? Theodora, the wife of Irena's old friend Yusef Zisman, retrieved little Pyotr from the orphanage where he had been safely hidden. Irena never forgot Yusef's words when he gave her Pyotr to save. Let him grow up to be a good man and a good Pole. Theodora kept that promise for Irena. Pyotr's cousin, Michał Głowinski, was another small survivor, and his mother also found him at the orphanage where Irena had protected him. Stanislava Busold and her husband had grown to love fiercely baby Bieta, now a toddler, and adopted her. My birth certificate is a small silver spoon engraved with my name and birth date, a salvaged accessory of a salvaged child, she says. But she today honors too the beautiful childhood her foster parents gave her. Bieta has searched for but never found that numbered bank account in Switzerland, where the Koppel family fortune may still be waiting. Katarzyna Meloch, the 10-year-old girl whom Julian Grobelna and the old priest passed into the care of Irena, lost her mother and her father long before the war was over. But after the war, an aunt found her. If the aunt had not seen the address on a package sent to me to the care center, Katarzyna says, she would not have found me so easily. Many decades later, Katarzyna remains haunted by memories of the ghetto. After the war, Katarzyna made her career as a journalist. But I am still unable to write about my stay in the Warsaw ghetto, she says. I saw bodies covered with sheets of paper. They were a permanent part of the landscape. And she always remembers the heroism and the tragic loss of her wartime guardian, Jadwiga Deneka. After the war, Alla's small child, Rami Golomb Grinberg, was reunited with her uncle, Sam Golomb, and his wife Anna, and went on to become both a nurse and a mother too. Today she is a grandmother. She remains friends with Elzbieta, the daughter of her wartime protectors, Jadwiga and Janusz Strawecka, who helped Irena in her children's network. These were a handful among thousands, and while many, like Rahela, coped by burying the past, there was one thing that Irena knew had to be excavated. In the spring of 1945, not long after Adam and Irena returned to Warsaw together, Irena and Janka met on a warm sunny afternoon in the ruins of Jaga's old back garden to look for the buried records on which the names and addresses and true identities of as many as 2,500 Jewish children had been recorded. They had a large, unwieldy shovel. It was just midday, and the women wore sturdy boots as they picked among the bricks and rubble. The house had been destroyed in the uprising, and since then looted, and the garden was a tangle of twisted metal and brush. In 1945, Warsaw was bleak and treeless. They searched that day for hours, but it was hopeless. The lists, along with Irena's wartime journals and account books, like so much else in the city, were lost forever, destroyed in the inferno and destruction of the Warsaw Uprising. However, Irena and her team were undaunted. The women set about to recreate large portions of the list from shared memory. The lists were never complete. Irena freely admitted that there were almost certainly children whose names they could not remember. The lists they could reconstruct were carefully punched out on Jaga's old typewriter, salvaged from the ruins. When the names were neatly catalogued, Irena gave the list to Dr. Adolf Berman, her colleague in Żegota, and now the post-war head of the Central Committee of Jews in Poland. In 1945, Adolf Berman took the list to what was then Palestine, and they rest today in an Israeli archive to respect the privacy of those thousands of families. Let me stress most emphatically that we who were rescuing children are not some kind of heroes, Irena insisted to those who wanted to celebrate her actions. Indeed, that term irritates me greatly. The opposite is true. I continue to have qualms of conscience that I did so little. And Irena worked for decades afterward, helping reunite her children with their families. Yaga Piotrowska and Jan Dobroczynski made their own lists of the Jewish children who had passed through the Catholic orphanages during the war and been given new identities. But here their stories diverged from Irena's. The awareness that I behaved in a decent manner and with dignity was something Yaga afterward said she treasured. More than 50 Jewish people passed through her home during the years of the occupation, and she acted with immense and true courage. But there was also, Yaga said, a deep wound in my heart. When Poland was liberated in 1945, a Jewish community was established, Yaga explains, and Janek Dobroczynski and I went over to it to give them the lists of the saved children. Jewish community leaders still remembered those old conversations with Jan Dobroczynski. Dr. Adolf Berman quoted back to Jan what he had said when the Jewish parents were powerless, how the children themselves would have to decide their faith when they were old enough. "You baptized them and made them Christians," came the retort. During the conversation, Yaga said, we were told that we had committed a crime by stealing hundreds of children from the Jewish community, baptizing them, and tearing them away from their Jewish culture. We left completely broken. 40 years later, Yaga was still grappling with this on her conscience. The end of the war also raised for Adam and Irena some other pressing questions. What to do about her marriage with Mietek? What to do, for that matter, about Adam's wife? By the end of 1946, the question took on a special kind of urgency. When Mietek returned to Poland from a prisoner of war camp in Germany, Irena was 5 months pregnant with Adam's daughter. What else could Mietek do? A divorce went ahead quickly. Adam had some complicated matters to attend to himself before they could focus on new beginnings. All that is known for certain of his private matters today is that he and Irena remained good friends with his wife after their divorce, and that, for reasons one can only guess, may have been connected to his unorthodox love life, his Jewish mother, Leocadia, was furious. In 1947, after having loved each other, sometimes passionately and sometimes hopelessly, for more than a decade, Adam and Irena were at last married in a small Polish ceremony. On March 31, 1947, Irena gave birth to their first child, a little girl named Janina, after her mother. In 1949, there was a second child, a son, Andrei, who died as an infant, and a few years later, another little boy, Adam. Irena remained unwavering in her commitment to her work. She threw her passion as zealously as ever into the social welfare department. She worked hand in glove in the years that followed with Maria Palester at the orphanage in Okęcie, and until the end of her very long life, she always kept her door open to any of her 2,500 children. She had been, said one witness, the brightest star in the black sky of the occupation. And that star was undiminished. Coda. The Disappearing Story of Irena Sendler, 1946-2008. In a fairy tale or motion picture, this would be the end of Irena Sendler's astonishing biography. We would read that the traumas of the war only touched her lightly. We would read of how her quiet heroism was celebrated across Poland, and I would tell you that it is only because this happened in a distant country that you have not heard this story. But life after the war in communist Warsaw was not easy, especially for those who had fought for Polish freedom in the resistance. Throughout the 1940s and 1950s, the Soviet state persecuted those who had participated in the Warsaw Uprising and those who, like those of Żegota, had turned to the Western Allies for their resources. Many of those people Irena had worked with most closely were now targeted, and Irena herself was under perilous and constant suspicion. It was not the end of anti-Semitism, and there were reasons why many of the Jewish survivors kept their silence. Names were changed. History was rewritten. And so the story was buried except among the innermost circle of collaborators. It was too dangerous to speak of what they had done together. Irena was devastated when, after decades as a left-wing activist and lifelong socialist, the ruling Communist Party punished her by targeting her children, who were denied educational opportunities in post-war Poland. Only among her old friends would Irena speak freely of the past. Sometimes she would look for Rahela, the only one of her Jewish school friends, besides Adam and Regina, to survive the ghetto revolt. "There are times when she avoids me," Irena wrote of that long post-war friendship. "Sometimes we go 2 or 3 years without seeing each other. During those periods, she manages to forget the past, at least a little, and enjoy the reality of the present. But sometimes, she's overcome with a longing for her lost loved ones, her parents, her brothers and sisters, and the surroundings in which she grew up. That's when she visits me." On those days, Irena was flooded by her own memories of Eva and Yusef and Allah and Dr. Korchak and all the lost children. And in her sleep, even decades after the war, Irena was haunted by nightmares about those who perished and nightmares about the children. "In my dreams," Irena said, "I still hear the cries when they were leaving their parents." When Adam Selnik here died of heart trouble in 1961, only in his late 40s, their tumultuous love story, which had already ended in divorce and seen the infant death of one of their 3 children, was also part of what Irena buried. Devastated by a string of post-war losses, Irena turned passionately to religion, for the first time since her adolescence, and her return to Catholicism was almost certainly a motivating factor in her decision to remarry Mietek Sendler that decade. It was also one reason why, in her 80s and 90s, and as a devout elderly woman, Irena glossed over certain complex parts of their bohemian wartime romances. It was impossible to speak of Irena's stories in communist Poland. But many of the infants and toddlers whom Irena and her network of friends helped to save from the ghetto lived after the war in Israel, the United States, or Canada, and by the mid-1960s, the youngest of them were in their 20s. In the West, the stories of Irena's children were taking hold and growing. In 1965, based on that burgeoning body of testimony, and especially on the wartime testimony of Jonas Turkov, Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Memorial Organization in Israel, awarded Irena Sendler its highest honor. They added her name to the list of those who are righteous among the nations, and planted in her honor an olive tree on the Mount of Remembrance. According to Jewish tradition, there are, in every generation, a tiny number of people whose goodness renovates the entire world in the face of evil, and Irena was named among them. So, too, in time, were Jaga Piotrowska, Maria Kukulska, Irka Irena Schultz, Maria Palester, Jadwiga Deneka, Władysława Marinowska, Janka Grobowska, Julian and Halina Grobelna, and even Jan Dobraczynski. The Soviets, however, refused to authorize Irena's passport so she could travel to Jerusalem to accept the award. Irena had been branded a decadent Western dissident and a public menace. So the story in Poland again faded from memory. By the late 1970s, many of those who had survived the war were disappearing. One day in 1979, Irena, Isa, and Yaga met, along with another woman in their old network, and they jointly authored a statement that recorded for posterity the history of their astonishing collaboration as young women. That statement reads, "We estimate, today after 40 years it is difficult to determine it exactly, the number of children which Zsigota helped in various ways to be around 2,500. Irena was always emphatic that she did not save them alone. "Every time people say that she saved 2,500 Jewish children's lives," Yoram Gross, the wartime boy known as Yerzhe, recalls, "she corrected this by saying that she doesn't know the exact number and that she was saving the children together with friends that helped her." And, as Irena said late in life, "I want everyone to know that while I was coordinating our efforts, we were about 20 to 25 people. I did not do it alone." After the war, when Irena made a list of all the people in Warsaw who took part in her network to help Jewish families and save their children, it was 14 pages long, and the names, in fact, numbered in the dozens upon dozens. What Irena never forgot was that she was simply one member of a vast collective effort of decency. She did not want the world to forget, either. That same year, in 1979, at an international conference on Holocaust rescuers and their stories, just as research into the buried history of the righteous was being unearthed and debated, a Professor Friedman stood up before a room of listeners and said that, in time, he believed there would be hundreds of inspiring stories coming to light in Poland. "If we knew," he told the crowd that day, "the names of all the noble people who risked their lives to save Jews, the area around Yad Vashem would be full of trees and would turn into a forest." But it was not until the beginning of Glasnost in the late 1980s, when she was in her 70s, that Irena was able to meet, face to face again in Israel, many of the children whose lives she saved. Those scenes of reunion were inspiring and heartbreaking. These children only knew her, if they knew her at all, as toddlers or infants, as Yolanta. But she was the last face of their childhood. It wasn't until the 1990s, after the end of the Cold War, that the story was finally able to be told in Poland. The story was recovered in the mainstream press by a group of American school children and their history teacher in Kansas, whose story is told in the memoir Life in a Jar. By the turn of the millennium, when the truth was being reported, celebrated at last, and remembered collectively, Irena was among the last living survivors of that network, already in her 90s. And parts of the truth were already lost to history. "I only have recourse to the memories burned into my mind by the events of those days," Irena said when she turned decades after the war to putting down her story on paper. In 2003, some of the children she helped to save wrote a joint letter nominating Irena Sendler for the Nobel Peace Prize. They nominated her again in 2007, and momentum was building. Press around the world began to notice. The committee awarded the honor that year instead to Al Gore for his work on global warming. But few doubted that in time Irena Sendler would be a laureate. However, Irena herself crossly brushed aside this talk of awards and honors. "Heroes," she said, "do extraordinary things. What I did was not an extraordinary thing. It was normal." She walked with the spirits of those they could not save, with the faces in her dreams of those who perished. And time now was scarce and precious. In 2008, at the age of 98, having borne witness not just to the better part of a century, but also to the lives of thousands who survived because of her unwavering moral compass, Irena Sendler died peacefully in Warsaw, surrounded by several of her children. She is buried in a wooded cemetery in Warsaw, amid a small copse of trees where the leaves fall gently in the autumn. And perhaps it is a mark of her fame now that on November 1st, Her simple tombstone is ablaze with candles and awash with small bouquets of flowers. And it is not only in November that one finds small votive candles burning there. In the hush of a Polish forest, where songbirds still speak their welcome to those who listen, the flame of her memory burns on quietly in the shadows, remembered. On her gravestone are only the dates of her life and the names of her parents. But if we could choose a more elaborate epitaph, perhaps we would engrave the words of Mahatma Gandhi, who once said, "A small body of determined spirits, fired by an unquenchable faith in their mission, can alter the course of history." Such were Irena and all her friends, and this is their story.
Irena's Children, the extraordinary story of the woman who saved 2,500 children from the Warsaw Ghetto, was written by Tilar J. Matzeo and read by Amanda Carlin. Editing and post-production by Common Mode, Paul Fowley, Technical Director. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Irena's Children, the extraordinary story of the woman who saved 2,500 children from the Warsaw Ghetto, is available in print from Gallery.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.